So which opening do you guys want to hear? The original one, the It's Greg, or the anti-ETH one?
We debuted the It's Greg during the course of the experiment. Yeah. We could go all the way back to the original just to be old school. But, let's do the original. We're purists. And, you know, I was listening to Radio Mysterio, so back when it had the original, just the pure Criswell stuff when he got all into, that Max Tony stuff. Oh, let's do it, you know. I just like things more authentic, if you know what I mean.
Okay. I turned on the speakers. Whoa, that's good and loud. I turned on the speaker so you guys can hear it. Here's the actual original. I haven't played in a long time.
Greetings, my friend. We are all interested in the future, for that is where you and I are going to spend the rest of our lives. And remember, my friend, future events such as these will affect you in the future. You are interested in the unknown, the mysterious, the unexplainable. That is why you are here. And now, for the first time, we are bringing to you the full story of what happened on that fateful day. We are giving you all the evidence based only on the secret testimony of the miserable souls who survived this terrifying ordeal. The incidents, the places. My friend, we cannot keep this a secret any longer. Let us punish the guilty. Let us reward the innocent. My friend, can your heart stand the shocking facts about
Radio Mysterioso.
Yeah, so that's wow. Here, I gotta turn
the speakers off. That was just for your benefit, so you can hear the.
There we go. You probably can't hear it now.
We appreciate it. No, we cannot.
Okay.
That's okay. We can hear it in our heart.
Okay, let me fade that little thing down. There's already a question from one of the listeners saying, "Why is it that we're doing? Has Radio Mysterioso changed its schedule or what?" And no, it's just because Steph and Steve were available at this time, and both asked, "Hey, can we do this live?" Because we all like doing it live. And that's the reason. What's happening here, besides this fun banter, is Stephanie Quick and Steve Ray are both longtime listeners, and at some point for the first time on December 7th, Pearl Harbor Day of 2014, they started an experiment. Yeah, it started an experiment to find out if they could affect what was going on the show. So I will let them explain what's going on. I'm looking at the spreadsheet of what went on.
Summary.
Yeah. So one or two or both of you can fight over it. Could you explain a little bit how you thought of this, what you tried to set out to do with it, and how you went about it?
Okay. Well, the idea occurred to me probably in late November of 2014 when you, Greg, were not enthused with the field. You were very non-enthused, and yeah, you were looking to have more, like, you know, I wish people who weren't all experienced and knowledgeable about ufology would experience something, and then I could talk to one of them, because the whole field is tainted with expectation. And so I had a friend of mine who had had some odd experiences call in, and she sounded just awful, and you were very kind. But you're like, oh my gosh, this person, they can't handle themselves. You just whisked her off the phone as quickly and peaceably as you could. And then, after that, you reiterated how you wish you could talk with people who weren't experienced with this stuff. And this other person, who shall remain nameless, he called up, and I think he was having spine surgery, but he proceeded to just, like, drone on and on at you about, well, what if, like, you saw, like, a lamp fall off the porch with no one touching it. Would that be enough to make you realize something paranormal was happening? You're like, well, I guess it might. Well, okay, what about two lamps? Or what if you saw, like, a thing with a carrot nose? And I was like, oh, my God, why is this jerk, who had also insulted my friend as being dumb, he's trying to wow Greg with UFO trivia? This is excruciating to listen to. And I'm pretty sure you've mentioned this show on other podcasts. I hate when people just come at me with non sequiturs out of nowhere trying to seem smart. I'm dead sure it was this case. So I was listening, and I was just cringing because my friend like kept saying my name. I'm here because of Steve Ray. I go, I don't want to bug Greg. It was awful. But then I realized that, wait a minute, like, Greg is complaining that he never gets to talk with, you know, a person just like the person he discarded, and now this other guy, he's actually saying, what would it take to make you notice something unusual? And he's saying it as repetitively as possible, but that was totally on point. Hmm. Like, okay, you want this? What would it take to get you to notice this unusual thing? This thing you actually just waved away because it didn't look like what you were expecting to notice. And I was like, oh my God, that's, like, that is such a profound metaphor for what Greg's talking about. And it happened while he's talking about it. And it's, so therefore, this ominous phenomenon that we are so enamored of can create beautiful metaphorical tableaus out of unwanted conversations. That's remarkable. That's amazing, in fact. But did we just imagine it? Like, let's see. And it also, it made sense that since you, Greg, are such a focus of paranormal interest, and there's all these paranormal interest folks listening and focusing on your show, yep, that it's like, oh, I bet this thing might well be a locus, a psychically charged event, and so if Camp Phenomenon was going to manifest itself, it would probably manifest itself here. And in fact, we think it just did. So rather than try to look for water on the street, why don't we look for it in the lake where we just saw it? So let's see if we can make this stuff happen with the show. Let's see if the phenomenon will appear again.
Right. Steph, how did Steve approach you about this, or was it your idea? Because you guys got together and in touch with each other and didn't tell me about this, didn't say a word about it till just this year I heard from Steve at Paramania that this had happened.
Yep, we kept it secret for quite a while. And mostly we did that to try and kind of protect the integrity of the experiment. So that, you know, it wouldn't be like, oh, well, we were trying to influence the show, but then we told all these people at the show, so they made things pop up to try and keep some kind of avoiding, like I said, contamination. Anyway, so let's see. Steve and I think we met on the Facebook page. Anyway, I noticed that there was this guy, and he was really funny, and he had a lot of energy.
Oh, that's so true.
And yes, and smart. And he really seemed like he had a lot of ideas and energy, and he wasn't, like, jaded and cynical. Like, a lot of people get, you know, in this field, especially if you've been around it any time, I mean, really the only kind of rational, quote-unquote, response is to become cynical and jaded because of all that crazy stuff that happens.
Yeah.
Anyway, so I'm 54 now, so I've, you know, been around a while, and I've had an interest in the paranormal and UFO since I was a little girl, so I've seen a lot of shit. And so I thought, this is fantastic. Here we have this guy, and he's, you know, on the younger side, intelligent, had a lot of ideas.
So I thought,
this is the type of person I'd like to, you know, cultivate or encourage or, you know, pep up, you know, kind of keep him interested and not get discouraged by how bummed everyone is about everything now, because he might do something interesting. So we've been talking back and forth about various ideas and, you know, sharing articles. And I shared with him a couple of articles that I'd written at a blog of mine in terms of some of my own experiences, like living at a Tibetan Buddhist meditation center, some of the paranormal stuff I'd seen there. And yeah, so then he got this idea. We were talking about, you know, you talked about that incident with
actually,
Steve.
Actually, you have that. I hate to interrupt, but the having worked on the timeline, you have it out of order. Mm-hmm. Like, we had mostly just, on Facebook, we talked about birds. Like, oh, it's bird night. I love grackles. Oh, I like robins. And then, because you seemed friendly, mm-hmm. I approached you with you know, floated the idea for, you know, like, here is the, what do they call it, the most elegant radio mysterioso ever. And it was after that we shared more stuff. We actually came together just because you seemed friendly on the show. Or on the page.
Well, I was right. Yes, because I thought you felt like a person who should we should encourage to be engaged in the field, and plus you just seem like a nice, friendly, smart person generally. So, anyway, yeah. So then we started going back, and then so when Steve approached me about his idea, which is basically, let's see if we can, by the power of our intention or attention, try and induce or precipitate or cause to occur synchronicities around the Radio Mysterioso show and the surrounding kind of thought space or fan base. I thought it was a great idea. He said, you know, we can document all our interactions through Facebook and email, so it'll all be like time and date stamps, which I also thought was very smart. And as it turns out, he has experience making transcripts, so he was able to transcript the shows as they were broadcast live, which is just invaluable.
Huh.
So, and
it's
yeah, I mean,
too much work to fake.
Oh yes, exactly. Oh, I mean, I have to give it to Steve. He's really done the yeoman's work of just doing the documentation, setting up the Excel spreadsheets, and the beauty part of that as well. I see lots of times when you are interested in finding out about UFO events or ghost stories or whatever, you go to books and you're getting, you know, a second or third hand account. But with computers, now we have the ability to have, you know, access to a lot of first hand accounts. And that's one of the things that I hope people take away from this. It won't be appealing to everyone because it's not like the elevator pitch for, you know,
The elevator pitch is pretty horrible. It's just like, hey, how would you like to spend a lot of time writing stuff down that maybe it'll happen, maybe it won't? Would you like to commit to doing that for 6 months in advance? And people will say, no, that sounds awful. But people will say, oh, well, that's what it takes. I'll do that. I'll give that a shot.
We pick a focus before a weekly show. Usually we try and get about a week in advance, but sometimes it was more, sometimes it was less.
Sometimes there
like
wasn't a live show every week, so we'd have to recycle a focus.
Yeah, but it'd be like honeybees or cats or amazement, heat, and then we'd document what happened during the live show, and then also keep an eye out for anything that happened anywhere else that seemed like it might be a result.
How about an example? How about an example of how this went down? Just take one of the examples and say, "Look, how did you think of the weekly focus? What did you want to do with it, and how did you think it manifested?"
Well, let's do heat because it's one of the more unbelievable ones as far as how it manifested.
Just to note, we wanted these to be perceptible results. Mm-hmm. And also, I don't necessarily see this as us influencing the events. Like, my thought was, like, there is the phenomenon out there, mm-hmm. and it seems to like to appear here, or it seems to be appearing here. So it's not that we necessarily caused anything. It was more that, hey, phenomenon, let's wave back. Okay, now wave back with heat or wave back with barbed wire. So it's not that I don't think that I misled, you know, we did anything other than, like, if you dial 911, a policeman appears, but the policeman pretty much showed up, and the apparatus that sets up 911 really made the policeman appear. We just sort of asked for
that's
it.
That's a good metaphor.
I
like that metaphor.
Yeah, so just it's a fine point, but I don't actually, well, and also a lot of the manifestations were completely unpredicted or unpredictable or even not realized until after the fact that it worked.
Right. So you would randomly...
Oh, and it wouldn't be random, because we just chose saucers or something. And it's like, well, of course he talks about saucers. He talks about saucers all the time. So we tried to come up with things that would be, that you would not say randomly, stuff that you had not talked about before, and things that, things that would be unexpected, so it would be more plausibly evidence of that something occurred.
Okay.
So in the middle of the winter, when it was freezing out here, but nice and sunny in California, we thought, okay, let's try heat. I would like heat to manifest in my house because it's freezing, but he's not likely to talk about it. So let's try heat.
And I don't know if you remember, Greg, when you had a show where there was smoke outside. I think you heard a car smash, and you went outside, and there was a car that was smoking.
Yes, I do remember that I thought that they'd hit my car, and I was like, "What is?" And I looked, and the car that had hit whatever other car had smoke shooting out of it, and there was, you know, and the sirens actually came and they stopped right in front of in front of the studio.
Yeah, that was the show where we had heat as a focus.
Yeah,
and lo and behold, that is not
where
only...
there's smoke, there's fire.
Yes.
Yeah. That. And, like, right next to your car, enough that it disrupted the course of your show, so you went out and looked at it, and it was right in front of the studio. In fact, I think it was the car right next to yours.
Yes. Yes, it was.
So, so whatever standards of proof you have, I would say, or in the voice of the spine guy, what would it take to make you notice? What if someone focused on heat in the car right next to yours, blew up during your show? Would that make you notice?
So it generally, this was kind of a meta experiment to see if you could cause something to happen on a show that you guys listen to all the time in some way that was tangible and could be, and as Steph said, have a timestamp on it, because that's the day, you know, the day that the show happened live. And you were listening to it live.
Yeah.
Go ahead, Steph.
We have a time and date stamp for when we chose the focus. So,
emails going back and forth showing we weren't just picking something weird that happened during the show after the fact.
Right.
And the other advantage of your show is that it's recorded, and you are universally regarded as a man of integrity. So when you say that you weren't collaborating, people will believe you instead of, you know, some nameless host.
No, I wasn't collaborating at all. I was kind of surprised and flabbergasted when Steve said, "Hey, we were doing this experiment on your show," and I said, "Huh? What? What are you trying to do to me?"
it's already done, and B, it was. It was nice. Oh, actually, yeah. Like, for one of them, staccato was my thought of a focus. And then, because Greg likes to have smooth radio, and then it's like, oh, no, that's awful. I shouldn't do that to his show. It would be conspicuous and completely unwanted. So I took it back. It's like, that's not the focus. That's not the focus. I want something else. What was it? I think I made it barbed wire.
Yeah.
But that episode, I was... getting big gaps in the audio. Like, every 10 seconds, there would be, like, a two-second pause. And I was hating it. And I was like, oh, this is terrible. And I, oh, my gosh, it's staccato. We actually do have interruptions. But the good thing was, it turned out to be just a local feature. Like, it was because my laptop was overloaded with the buffer. So I asked for staccato, but no, wait, I take it back. And I got staccato. But only me. I got staccato, not interrupting you. So it's like, oh, why, thank you, phenomenon. You really delivered. You're pretty cool.
And that's funny, too, to read Steve's notes to me as he's kind of trying to describe how he thought of it. And then he's, oh, no, and then, you know, going back and forth is kind of funny, too. But then we also did have some other focuses where we got what seemed to be very strong hits. That weren't on your show. For example, we chose honeybees one week, and to get a feel for this being a hit, you have to understand that I have been a daily walker for the last 30, 35 years. You know, every day I'm out walking a mile or two at least once, you know, like clockwork. So the week that we had, the time period that we had honeybees as a focus, I happened to be going on my daily walk. I looked down to push the crosswalk button, and there was a bee on the little sign where you push the button, right next to the button. I thought, that's interesting. I've never seen a honeybee on that sign before. And so I took a picture of it, and I sent it to Steve. And then I was influenced by a book called The PK Man by Jeffrey Mishlove. He has a lot of discussion about trying to get more of a scientific or statistical handle on spontaneously occurring events.
Right.
And because I'd read that, I thought, I know I've never had this happen to me before, certainly not at this intersection. So I calculated the number of times that I pushed that button, and it's like over 7,000. So we know that statistically, the odds are, you know, at least that strong that this is a, you know, an unusual event. So, you know, we'd have those type of results that we included too. The other part that is nice about the structure, even though it makes for a huge document, but because we have it so thoroughly documented, like Steve said, it's too huge to have faked it. But the other thing is, if people are really interested, they can read for themselves and decide if they think, you know, particular things seem compelling as results or not. You know, you can kind of take it on your own terms and say, well, this seems like stretching, but this seems really strong. You know,
right.
Yeah, it's, I had a category of match called like neurosis, narcissism. It was like, well, I'm just talking about me, and so it feels like it, but it might just, well, actually, if someone was like, yeah, that's just your imagination, you're crazy. But I still wrote it down just, in part to demonstrate that I have insight, and I know that this is a ludicrous theme, but I don't know, because it felt like a hit, and if nothing else, this is a documentation of, I don't know, slow delusion or folie à deux or ideas of reference. It's something, and I leave it for the world to decide what this is.
Okay.
Might be wrong, but they can still decide.
Right.
Go ahead.
No, please go ahead.
I was just going to say, this really got me thinking about what is information.
Mm-hmm.
Because when you have something, it's like, okay, I'm talking to this other guy over the computer that, you know, I'd never met. This is the first time we've actually spoken. We've still never met in person. And so we're trying to focus our attention on honeybees to show up in this show. And then there's a honeybee that shows up in a very unusual spot in my life in a way that I'm pretty damn sure to notice it. So, you know, I don't squash it or get stung. It's how, on what level does, because it's one thing if you're thinking honeybee and then, you know, on the computer, and then you start seeing the word honeybee on your computer. Then you kind of think, well, you could see the kind of the through line on that. But
could you be tuning into it? Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, and how is it tuning in? How is, you know, this honeybee ending up there? Or I just, you know, cause I think I would have noticed that if it had happened before. You know, it's just, to me, it's really getting at a lot of this, the real crazy stuff that's hard to understand and think about that Valet talks about when he talks about the nature of information in paranormal events.
Yes.
And, you know, what is that thing that we're getting at? I guess it's like the Platonic ideal that is like kind of the innate nature of bees or something that's popping up in all these different, you know, spheres.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, when you say that, the first thing I think is, you know, are there honeybees around you all the time and you just notice? Or did you call one up because of the significance and it was significant for you? And this is what I'm sort of leaning towards these days, is reality just a blank slate and whatever we want to put on it, we basically put on it and that becomes our world? I'm reading a book on information theory that's really hard to understand. But what I'm getting out of is something to that effect, because I think the information theory thing, because of what Valet pointed out and a few other people, is very important to the paranormal and to UFO stuff. If we look at reality instead of being a physical reality, as physicists tell us, but a collection of just a huge amount of infinite information that we shape, if that makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
it does make sense. I don't know if I buy that. That seems like how is that information? How is the world? Well, I don't know. Like, because I do think, okay, this is a thin hair to split, but I do think, oh, much against my will, because my conclusions end up sounding like The Secret, where if you visualize something, it will appear. And that's so, that's hippie and wussy and dumb, except it does seem to be true. So I'm not happy about that. But it is sort of a cool effect, though, and I spent many years, many weeks and hours documenting that it does seem to be the case, but I don't know if it's...
Maybe it's more like fields.
It's just changing in front of us.
Yeah, maybe it's more like fields. I mean, there's the possibility of a train hitting you if you jump in front of it. Now there's, you know, an infinite number of things that could happen with that train, including maybe you just being going right through it because of some weird physical thing. But there are things that are more likely than others. Like, you will probably get hit by the train if you jump in front of it. But there, you know, there's an infinite number of things that go along with that could be looked at in a different way, and that maybe you were hit by the train in another, you know, stream of reality or whatever. It's just hard to think of these things in the way that that we experience reality, in a way that is not what our senses are telling us, which is, and you know, our brains and our senses and everything we've brought up with and our genetics and all that stuff. Anyway, back to your thing.
I would encourage anyone who has any inkling of interest or flicker desire to try this type of experiment, in terms of just trying, you know, to direct your attention towards something and see what happens out there, and write it all down.
Mm-hmm. The writing down is really important.
That'll prove to yourself that you're not just, you know, wishful thinking.
Exactly. And the other thing is that I was trying to organize some of these notes over the last couple of days, and it occurred to me that it can be very difficult to grasp these kind of strains of some of these kind of clusters of things that happened, because it's more like a logic of a dream. It's all about a symbolic and emotional connection, as opposed to like a kind of linear causal physical connection or the Newtonian physics connections.
Meanings of dimension.
Exactly. It's more important, the feeling that you have about a flower at the moment that you jump in front of that train. That will determine more whether or not you get hit in this logic than the fact that the train's on a track and you're on the track, right?
Right.
Which is very difficult to deal with.
Go ahead.
I would like to encourage anyone out there listening, if they want to think about different flowers and then jump in front of trains and write it all down, that would be great.
Don't do it. This is that reality. That's not this reality.
We don't know. There's a part where they overlap.
There was a strange cluster, and I don't know if it would be a hit or not, but there was a very strange cluster of people that are important to me, who ended up being hospitalized with blood clots during the run of this experiment. Now, this struck me, my mom.
Blood clots wasn't the focus.
No, it was not. We had these kind of spontaneous, I've been thinking of them as like spontaneous clusters, and I really don't know how to think about them. But I did notice that you had, I think it was Erica Keith. The man who died of a blood clot.
Erica Keith. She was in the studio with the guy.
Jim Keith's daughter. Yeah.
Yeah, and he had died of a blood clot.
Yeah.
I had almost died of a pulmonary embolism just a couple of years ago. And then Jeff Wells, who is the founder of the Rigorous Intuition blog and forum that I read every day for at least 10 years, ended up during the course of this experiment, after my mom had been hospitalized, he was hospitalized with blood clots as well. So it's like almost like there's this kind of like a well of attraction or a vortex that kind of gets started about certain things. I don't know. I really don't know what to think about that type of stuff. But I think it I think looking at some of that stuff might give us a little bit of a feeling for how this information works, but I'm not sure. It's all there if you want to read about it.
Do you think the cluster may have? Do you think the cluster may have gotten stronger, or because you were doing the experiment, that there was like extra energy, that you know, just extra pattern making oomph in your life, or something? Or do you think it was unconnected?
I kind of got the feeling that it would be something more along those lines, or something more where kind of certain potentialities are get a little more, like you say, oomph or energy to pop into being.
Yeah,
I really don't know.
That is, as you both know, that is an old magical maxim.
What is it?
Well, when you by manifesting things that you want to come into existence, I mean that's the idea of Western occult study, I believe, and getting out of your own way.
Yeah.
But yeah, the main idea is I want this to happen, and I'm going to make, you know, it's not like the Namyo Renge Kyo Soko Gakkai people where you chant for ice cream, but it's it's more like I will visualize this thing that I want to happen, then I will move towards it and make an effort towards it, and by doing these, you know, rituals or whatever you want to call them, I'm affecting causality and the way I move through the time stream and all that, so that these things will intersect with me at some certain point, and the thing that I want to happen will happen. That I think that's the idea behind it, and I think we're, you know, updating it by doing experiments like you guys are doing, and I think what you did has implication. I mean, you both know this, I'm sure, has implications far outside what you did. And I've just got the spreadsheet here with the notes on it. But do you have a full report with everything in it that you guys have like all put? I think you did send me a copy of this, Steve, but it was quite large.
I did. Yes, it is. Well, that's the, we wanted to be refutable. We wanted to share the raw data.
Because I'm gonna post it after with the show. I'm gonna post a link to it. We can put it up somewhere, and then there'll just be a link in the write up for the show, so people can download it if they want. If that's okay with you.
Okay with me, Steph. Was there anything you wanted blotted out?
No, not at all. Well, I'm just laughing because part of the reason that there was times when we didn't get results, and I think that sheds some light on it that people have noticed these type of patterns before. Definitely, I think if you want to have more results, generally speaking, it's good to have like a freewheeling, easy, open, fun atmosphere. And I took advantage of that at times by kind of ranting and raving about various things and persons in the paranormal field. And you can read it all in there. But I think that would, lend more air of honesty and frankness to our documents. But I'm not redacting all the nasty things you said.
It is a rather unexpurgated record of, hey, are you there?
There you go.
Oh, you're not there. Okay. What about bees? You want to do bees? No? Okay, I'm doing bees. Like, yeah, a lot of it is as boring as any other radio traffic. You know, like the guy, like there FBI guys on surveillance, they have to listen to so much stuff of, you want that? Yeah, you ate the last one. Yeah, and that's got to go in the FBI record of what happened at the mafia safe house. So,
well, there's a lot of noise. And, go ahead.
Mm-hmm.
Say again.
I was going to say
nothing.
There's a lot of noise, and your brain is you know designed to pick through the noise and find something that makes sense. Which somebody could say in some of these instances, like there's one of them. It's what was it? Milk. The focus was milk. The interview the note is the interview took up nearly the entire show time and had no matches. But afterwards, the first song Greg played on a whim was "I'm a Little Martian," which has a conspicuous cow moo sound effect. That's a bit of a stretch. But you know the one with the heat is to me is like a 100% hit. So. So I'd be interested now to go back and read some of the more, you know, some of the details and some of the other things that went on, just to see, you know, how close you got. And I'm sure you have an abstract somewhere where you say, look, this is what we did. This was a high point. This was a low point. And what we seem to think is this works in this way. And why don't other people try it either using this method or you know, something similar or something totally different to see if this manifestation can be verified by other people in some way. And another thing that could be done is have a, I don't know who would be a disinterested third party, read it and say, you know, like they used to do with the remote viewing
experience.
Yeah, and just say, look, this is a hit, this is not a hit, you know, things like that.
That's totally evil. That's why we made all the notes that people could go by and say, this seems weak. Yes, that's total narcissism. You guys missed one is another possibility. Like, I think, like, what? One of them I describe is like, this is a $2 prize and a $2 lottery ticket. Like, this is barely anything. It's not nothing, but let's try again. You know, it's I can't say that it was a complete waste of a week, but maybe it was. And also with the description of different sorts of synchronicities, it could provide a working vocabulary for folks to say, okay, I believe in physical manifestations, but I don't believe in semantic sequences, you know, where for Honey, where we had the you were trying to find some songs to play, and you had, like, the Country Bears Jamboree from Disneyland.
Yeah.
And then you said, no, I'm bored with that. Let's play something else. And you went to the Golden Hits of Leslie Gore. So, we've got Bears, and we've got Golden.
Yeah.
To me, that adds up to Honey.
Right.
Someone else might disagree. Also, the what seemed one conclusion, or one thing that I noted, is that it manifested, the phenomenon has an easier time working in with chaos or with disorder. And when there would be a song that played that you didn't mean to play, that often seemed to that was where the hits would lie. And when you had the Project Core interview, everyone had something to say, something, you know, they had a definite plan. There was nothing in there, but then at the end, as soon as you let your mind roam freely, then we get a milk sound. And that was, for the record, the only song you played, or like the first one you played.
Right.
There were only like three songs to choose from. So it works better with unplanned stuff.
Yeah. You've got to get to the point where, and it's really, really hard for me to allow things like that to happen, allow for a semantic interpretation and without going off the edge of the table and saying, oh my God, it's so cosmic. But I love living on that razor's edge, hence excluded middle. So, you know, I'm not throwing this stuff out. I'm just trying to think, you know, how could meaning as a dimension and as a cause of anti-entropic force be worked into the theory. I think it has by a few people, but I'd be interested to see if somebody could do an experiment basically, you know, just based on that. How anti-entropic is wishing?
I will note that sometimes, like, things would manifest as puns.
Huh.
And I might be, like, a poor subject for this because I'm so verbal. And so, like, I see great puns that apparently nobody else can see. but just like Mike Quellen, like, his stuff manifested through mapping and sleeping outside. Stuff appears to me or us based on, like, often with a great deal of puns and wordplay. But that also with the Forrest J. Ackerman stuff. Have you heard about that?
Yes, I actually proofread that book for Paul Davids.
Oh, okay. Wow. I enjoyed
it thoroughly, actually.
Okay, so there's your second hyperverbal manifestation. Like, you know, I felt all vindicated that Ackerman's ghost is manifesting through, like, weird capitalizations and stuff.
Right.
And it's like, oh, that is as obscure as here's no hits, here's that brick you asked for. And it's like, oh, man, phenomenon, you are a trickster.
Yeah, but the thing is, if you're asking for it, it comes to you and nobody else. This sucks for science.
it does. It absolutely does. Yeah, you have like the whole go forth and multiply. You know, take my, you know, you can do this in your own life. A, it's going to probably manifest in things that people are best at, which seems to be like a way of keeping it from. I believe the phenomenon, it doesn't, like, you can't tell people where it is. Like, it doesn't want to be looked up. It wants to be spotted out of the corner of your eye.
Yes.
Tell other people where to find it. It's not going to be there. In fact, it's going to be less there than normal.
Right.
So, but it also responds to, like, if you look for it and we, you know, try to make things, you know, come up with less and less likely things, like amazement, which... that actually was, we wanted that to appear to cheer you up because you were so bored with everything. So it's like, okay, there's no way Greg's going to be excited by the Zorgi Awards. He hates everything in ufology. So let's see if we can get this to appear, and that'd be nice for him too. So amazement, amazement. And you were completely amazed.
I was. I remember that show.
Yeah, I had one thought that... like, you know, they say that dynamite blew up the bridge, but someone wanted the bridge to be gone, and he found some dynamite. So, you know, who really did it? Who's the cause? Who's the effect? It occurred to me that perhaps you just really wanted ufology to get better, and so your hatred of the status quo was so strong that it manifested Steph and I to do this experiment, which then wanted amazement, and then things became better just to satisfy that. That's the most psychotic interpretation yet.
No, well, that's the one that makes me...
Well, I was wondering...
Go ahead.
I was wondering how come I don't have any memories that go past about 2.5 years ago, but...
yeah, I'm more sitting in a Sears catalog then.
Oh, no. Yeah.
Well, the universe changed on December 7th, 2014, I guess.
Yes, you were so bored, things had to become much better.
Yeah, well, you said strength and
comments on this, Greg.
Strength and yes, I do. The first one was strength and joy to the host, which was very nice. Summary: in contrast to his recent "what's the use" attitude, Greg was brash and confident, taunting and threatening the listeners for not calling in and daydreaming about having a UFO discussion group under his quote complete dictatorship. Unquote.
As I said, unexpurgated.
Yeah. Well, you're doing this right now because I've had a horrible couple of days and I've been in a horrible mood, which doesn't happen to me often.
Oh.
And this interview is making me very happy. So it's working again. So.
Oh, cool.
Yeah.
Great. Dividends. Compound interest.
Yeah. Well, my takeaway from this whole thing is that, you know, what we've been talking about, how does intention affect people's lives who have no idea that the attention is affecting them, you know, kind of like doing the prayer for people that are sick or whatever. And that Larry Dossey wrote a whole book on that. And all of these, there are some, you know, apparently tangible effects, but a lot of them are, science doesn't like them because it doesn't follow the rules because it involves intention, wishing, emotions, interpretation, and individual viewpoint and experience. So
all of which, I'm not sure if science hates it, except that it's very hard to write down. It's hard to prove, and that's, you know, if there was a way to do that, science would be fine with it.
No, I meant the scientific method, not scientists.
Right, right.
Yeah, if we don't have a lot, on the kind of the hard sciences especially, they just don't have good theoretical tools for this type of stuff. If you look at someone like Jeffrey Mishlove's book, The PK Man, has some good ideas in there for studying these spontaneous events.
Yeah.
With a more critical eye. George Hansen's work on the trickster and the paranormal.
Yeah.
You know, he's getting into like structural anthropology, sociology. There's a guy, Paul Ouellette,
Yeah.
He was on Tribunal's show. So a lot of these, there's, the stuff is out there, but the problem is, you know, I have a more background in anthropology as I was able to study that when I was young in the UC system.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, that takes a lot of time and a lot of money. Pardon?
I asked which culture shrinks heads the best was my question, but you can answer that at leisure.
I don't know. You know, I was studying more of the Americas, so we didn't get so much into the shrunken head stuff. But so I didn't study that, unfortunately. Anyway, but you know, it takes time for you to kind of understand the stuff and wrap your head around it, and just have time to kind of soak in it, so that you understand these concepts that can help you approach this type of material. So to me, that is just part of, you know, what we could use more of,
right?
Is just, you know, time and access to those type of more, you know, like a higher educational resources to be brought to bear on the matter. And that's, you know, you're not seeing a lot of corporations going around throwing money at anthropologists and stuff to study UFOs. So, but there are some materials that are out there. Another thing, I think that it sounds very more woo-woo, but I think that if people are interested in learning more about the paranormal, UFOs, and what they're about, you have your own mind. But
yeah,
really, any type of attention practice, you know, mindfulness meditation,
yeah,
walking meditation, you know, just learning to use your own observational capacity, your own attention, in a more kind of a mindful, neutral, aware capacity is going to help you to kind of get around some of the boxes that you talk about, right?
Yeah.
That we're always trying to have it, this box of beliefs, and we're cramming in there, you know, everything as soon as it happens, we're cramming into some belief box.
Or even just a categorization box.
Exactly, yep. And if you do these type of practices, it is possible for you to kind of get your toe in the door before it closes, so you can get a glimpse around things and develop that. But, you know, again, it takes time, but it's, you know, it's completely doable. Any type of yoga, for me, I think that really helped in this experiment that I've had quite a lot of years practicing yoga, done a lot of meditation study, lived up in that Tibetan Buddhist Meditation Center, you know, saw what the Rinpoches and the Lamas were getting up to, and so it just helped when we're trying to focus in on something. I have more experience with that, so.
Right.
This is like taking up meditation, that sort of, people who do that, they are, they're taking a concrete step towards opening themselves up to new things, but that, isn't that just like similar to, I'm going to get this Ouija board and thus indicate that I'm opening myself up to new things, or I'm going to read all of Nick Redfern's books for I have eternal life, and I'm going to open myself up to new things. It's not to say that it doesn't work, but is that, aren't those kind of similar?
Kind of. They're both mindful, but the thing is, you can't obsess on the. I think what Steph is talking about is mindful about being opened up and not filtering as much. And if but you need to focus too a lot of the time. But that there's that thing of going switching between the two of mindfulness and being open to things, and then, you know, very focused study as well. And, you know, I think a balance between the two is what people should strive for. I do, actually, but I don't know how good I am at it.
I must say, hearing Nick Redfern say, this guy who just writing down everything that happened at this particular time. Oh, what a loser. That guy was nuts. Like, oh, man, I hope he wait till next season spreadsheet. Oh, man.
Which is why if it's not on there and I don't remember, I encourage you to write an extended abstract about it, so people say, oh, okay, I guess I should read this because there's something here.
It's just a really weird thing to send anyone right now. Yes, Mr. Bishop, we will create a great abstract, and you let us know when it's good, when it is
Yeah, I'm not gonna check it. You just tell me when it's ready, and I'll link it on the show in the description.
I'm sure you'll glance at it and tell me if it's out of, if it's.
Oh, okay. I'll do that.
Work.
I'll do that.
Yeah. No, you're nice about that. It's like everything you've said, I believe it's true, but I don't understand it. Can you say it better, differently? But I will.
I don't even know if I believe. I just want to give you the benefit of the doubt until I can finally say, this is so full of crap, which I often don't say, unless it's Sean Morton.
I have to wonder, like, it's like, you know, Greg's so nice. Maybe we're pathetic and insane, and he's just being nice. I mean, he's really nice. Well, you would have not. I'm sure it's fine.
Okay, we've been talking an hour. If you want to go on and talk about this more or anything else, I am open for another hour of whatever. You know, I'll ask you anything, you ask me anything, and we can keep it going. Go ahead, but can we take a music break so I can run to the bathroom?
Go as thou wilt, shall be the whole law.
Yeah. Somebody pick something that they've heard on the show, a piece of music that they like. I'll turn on the speaker so you guys can hear it, and then I'll run to the bathroom, which will probably give me anywhere between 2 and 3 minutes, depending on the song.
That Coney Island song is great, but I don't know if you've already heard it or if it's not in your right pocket of your great iPad phone
What island?
Coney Island. You found it on the. I sent you the YouTube link. It's by the Barry Sisters.
Let me find it.
That song, That song makes me so happy. It is just fun, fun, fun.
And at the end of the show, we will. Steph can pick hers. Oh, I guess it looks like they were a some sort of a novelty Jewish act.
Yeah. Yes. They were like the Yiddish Andrews Sisters.
Oh, okay.
Oh, shake. You did. It was on the YouTube. Listeners, you're going to be very happy with listening to this great song. How many do we have? 3 listeners still, or you have to 4? Regardless, you people are blessed.
Yeah.
You are truly lucky. You are the chosen listeners. So you get to hear this wonderful song.
Okay, here's Hebrew National Kosher Classics, Coney Island by the Barry Sisters, and we'll be right back.
Are die Menschen, wo's hoben a tropical town? Sie gefind sich a Platz beim tropical yam. Sie's gesinnt in ihr Face, war ying in alt. Wie die climate is heiß, in die Wasser is kalt. In Coney Island.
In Coney Island.
Sie's a paar genegen in Coney Island.
In Coney Island.
Ah, this is mein Land. So give the tropical down to the tropical seashore. By them yum, 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 yum. Sie's a Take an old shoebox, pack it up with lunch, because on the beach the bunch likes to munch. You won't have to season the carrots and peas. There's garlic and cheese in the ocean breeze in Coney Island.
In Coney Island.
It's so continental in Coney Island.
In Coney Island.
Yes, that's my land. So take the family, Molly and Samily, swimming in them. Yum, 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 yum. Siza Michael. Your mouth. Here you sit in the sun, don't cost a cent. Sis billig wie Borscht in ihr Wert verbrennt in Coney Island.
In Coney Island.
Sis a paar gelegen in Coney Island.
In Coney Island.
Ah, this is mein Land. Bin schöne Mädelach, kurzing die Kleidelach, schwimmen in den Yam, 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 Yam. Sis a Michael.
Oh, Mr. Schwartz, those patent leather shorts.
Mit darf gehen, a heime läuft in mi Juck. Die Train is gepackt, mi Stift in mi Schluck. Sie ist spät bei Nacht in euer Club. Eus gemattert, gepattert, a Tug in Coney Island.
In Coney Island.
Mi kenn werden verblonget in Coney Island.
In Coney Island.
Nur das is mein Land.
So give the tropical down to the tropical seashore. Bite then, yum, 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 yum. Sisa Michael. At the seashore, by the tropical yum.
You're right, Steve. That is a very enjoyable song.
Hooray. Yeah, it's all in another language, and it just seemed like great Radio Mysterioso bait.
It is. It's perfect.
That was very fun.
I have a question for you, Greg. Did you notice anything like aside from just the direct frustration of like not being able to find a parking space for 45 minutes. But do you have any recollection of, feeling odd or it's like, or I don't know, out of control, like I can't seem to focus on stuff. Like, do you have any memories of odd feelings during the experimental period?
I don't think so. I mean, it didn't seem any different than any other period. And what did this go from, like, December of 2014 to April of the next year, of 2015? Yeah.
Yes. So,
Not really. God, was I canned during that period? I'm not sure. I can't remember how long ago I was fired. I was laid off from my job a couple years ago, and I decided not to go back to it, not to go back to that kind of work.
Yeah.
Okay. Okay. That's fine. I was just curious, to see if it was noticeable to the guy who the phenomenon would have been steering to a greater or lesser degree, and completely non-noticed, and that's entirely plausible, since it works. I don't know. It works when people aren't paying attention,
right?
And so, therefore, yeah. Why would you notice?
No, not really. I mean, I appreciate what was happening, like trying to make me feel better, but also the object of trying to do something with a show that dealt with these kind of subjects to see if it could manifest with something that was like, predisposed and pre-primed to be affected by it or with it or whatever you want to call it.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I'm glad you like it. And the whole thing, you're the one who said, don't tell anyone you're doing an experiment until it's long past. We were following your suggestions the whole time.
Yeah.
Admonition of ISIS, as Walter Bosley would put it.
Yes, exactly. Yeah, well, I silence, a lot of times, I don't know if you know this, but people say, what are you doing right now? And it's like, I don't want to talk about it. And it's not because it's a secret. It's because if I talk about it, all the energy I had for it goes out my mouth. And I don't, and my subconscious goes, well, you've already done it, so don't worry about it now. And the mojo just gets, it's like a balloon, just, it pulls all the mojo air out of it.
That is a good point. Also, I had a thought. Oh, I'm sure it was a great thought. Maybe it wasn't a great thought. But I was thinking something similar, but from a different angle. By talking, by bragging about your latest results, that can lead to the pressure and expectation to keep having great results. You know, like you've got people mm-hmm. say, well, what happened this time? Like, I'm going to round up and say the thing that didn't really count probably does count. By mentioning it to nobody, though, until it's all done, then it's done. You can't wreck your experiment by not wanting to be embarrassed in front of your friends.
Right, exactly. It's part of my greater thing here about the paranormal and UFO stuff is if you get egos out of it, it might change the way that not only that people look at it, but how the phenomenon reacts to people looking at it, if you know what I mean.
Yes. I also think that since we were trying to help the phenomenon, that it was probably more inclined to manifest.
Right. Yeah.
I really think it likes attention. I don't know why. I just know that it really seems to. It likes people to wonder about it. It likes people to chase it, but definitely to chase it, not just to walk up and stare at the place that it's known to be.
And what it doesn't like is people saying, look what I found.
It's, give an example.
Most of ufology?
Well,
my point is that if you say, look what I did, and this is, you know, look at this great thing, you know, one, I think that it's an old thing in paranormal circles that once you get excited and emotionally involved ego-wise with whatever you're manifesting, it goes away. I firmly believe that actually happens. I mean, I've had examples of it happen to me, and I've seen it happen to other people. And then people like Raiden in particular have told me the same thing.
Oh, well, yeah, if it's like, behold, like, I'm Stephen Greer with a UFO or two, then, like, when it's just a way for you to get on stage, then, yeah, it's,
And then you become blind because your ego has created a filter for you whereby you only talk about and promote the things that make everybody clap and smile at you, and then the things that don't make people clap and smile at you are ignored. And some of that stuff
you're really thinking of booking.
Yeah, it becomes a static, kind of solidified structure. And I think that, like George Hansen's idea of liminality being just part of the conditions that it needs to, phenomena needs to manifest, is really applicable. You can't just be kind of, okay, now here I am, this kind of packaged personality. That's a very stable, static thing, and you need that fluidity and that liminality, that kind of trickster, kind of unknown angle, in order for the phenomenon to manifest. So being able to stay in that kind of liminal space can be very tricky. I think certain people can pull that off, you know, certain outsiders, but it becomes, it's funny, I was talking to George Hansen about this when Jim Moseley died, and he was talking about him, how he really manifested the archetype of the trickster.
Yeah.
And I wrote to him and I said, you know, it's interesting because he managed to have his newsletter, Saucer Smear, actually he had it for decades and decades. It was actually very stable, and which is very unusual to have any type of institution be stable like that in this, studying the phenomena of the paranormal and UFOs.
Right.
And what struck me about that was I used to date this lady who was ran a sweat lodge. She was trained as a Cherokee and Eskimo medicine woman. And she didn't run one, but she knew people that ran coyote lodges. And she said, people working with coyote or trickster medicine, you had to be very specific to do everything exactly backwards, or else it would like really get crazy out of control. And she's talking about how disciplined they had to be about doing everything backwards. And what struck me is how Moseley, first of all, it wasn't like a pro UFO thing, right? A saucer smear, anti whatever. He was always friends with all the enemies and the debunkers of the field. And he called all the subscribers like non-subscribers.
Yeah.
So it really reminded me of that coyote medicine.
Huh.
And it made me wonder if that's one reason why he was able to keep things going, is because he was kind of doing the coyote medicine.
Right.
But
I guess he kind of was.
On that train of thought.
He was fooling the trickster, bowing to it.
Yeah. Yeah. And was he gay?
No.
Because a lot of coyote and trickster people tend to be, you know, like gay or bi or whatever. It's just one.
Yeah, I don't really know the guy's personal life, but I'm almost certain he was not gay.
Mm-hmm.
He might have been bi. I have no idea, but I'm pretty sure he wasn't straight. Though I think he married once.
There's
and
an excellent chance I mixed him up with someone else.
Maybe Gray Barker was gay.
Yeah, I could very well. That's right. I think I got them mixed up because they got up to shenanigans.
What's really interesting is that... Go ahead.
Here's a great... Why was Gray Barker late for the UFO conference? He spent the whole weekend on a bender.
Oh, wow.
He, it's interesting. Nobody's ever really written about Gray Barker being gay. What pressures those put on him, how it affected what he was doing and how he was writing and how he interacted with people. And also that Mosley knew that at the time, and he was open-minded enough that Gray Barker could be one of his best friends, and he didn't care. So yeah. What? A lot of people were very uptight about that then.
Oh, yeah.
I think
there's
a documentary about that topic, though, called, like, Shades of Gray.
Oh, yeah. I haven't seen that. I've only seen Ralph Koons because, that one came out zillions of years ago, and I'm friends with Ralph now. But, yeah, I liked Ralph's, but I never saw the second one, no.
Well, there we go. It is there to be explored.
I know,
but a
movie night.
Movie night.
Yeah, because I wanted to see that one, but I didn't see it, so...
I will be up in the Bay Area next week. Maybe we'll have a movie night.
Oh, so what part of the Bay Area are you coming up to?
Basically,
where dare you stay?
I probably will not stay in town because it's too damned expensive. But I'm gonna. I'm gonna drive up the coast and stop in a couple places and paraglide, and then end up in San Francisco and meet with some friends. And then, I don't know, I guess I'll stay in the East Bay or something, or someplace, or south of it, south of town, where it's not so damned expensive.
Oh, God, tell me about it. It's horrible. But, yeah, that sounds like a really beautiful drive. I love that drive.
Yeah, I haven't done it in a while, but, yeah, I'm going to take a tent with me and fly and camp a couple days and then end up in San Francisco. Do you guys have other stuff that you... okay, I'll turn it around. You guys ask me stuff.
Oh, jeez, I'm terrible. I was getting put on the spot, and I can't think of anything.
Okay, you're not on the spot. Go ahead.
I've got I've had another weird manifestation, also just for the record, like I would have a higher standard of proof, or I demand a higher standard of proof for the hits we may or may not have gotten outside of the set of predetermined show thing, because if you've got the whole rest of the week to look for stuff that might match, that's a lot easier to, just through random chance. Like, I would want those
coincidences
to be much stronger. But I do have one relatively recently. I went to see Showboat, which I hadn't ever seen before, didn't know the plot. I think I actually had it mixed up with The Music Man. And Showboat, that sounds good. I'll go see that. And I go driving down. I've got my ticket, and it's like, okay, where do I park? I park in this this lot, and I'm walking off, and this guy says, hey, this is valet parking only. It's like, what? What do you mean? Well, then why didn't you have tape up? I'm sorry, you can't, but you have to go and, like, check your ticket at the valet. You can't park, or you have to get out of my lot. It's like, what? And he had, like, he was wearing, like, some sort of, like, nautical shirt, like something, like, as part of a Navy dress uniform with epaulettes. And I thought, what the hell? That there was a box, a wooden box full of keys on a table and, like a bale of magazines. And I was really mad because I'd already paid for parking. And I was like, okay, do you want me to give you money? What do I have to give you to stay? And he said, no, you just can't park here. And I was, like, furious. I'm like, well, these other people are parking illegally. Like, yeah, because you're distracting me. That's people that I, they're on my lot that I can't do anything with. So I thought, and also I've got, like, 10 minutes before showtime. So this is, like, incredibly frustrating. But he's got a big wooden box of keys. Someone else came up and was, like, driving a car. And so I thought, okay, this is pretty... I'm very, very angry. I'm going to complain to the opera, but I don't want to get towed because then I'm going to be worried about getting towed during the whole opera. So just park somewhere else. And afterwards, I went to complain, and they said, yeah, we've been having a problem with that. Those guys aren't associated with the opera or our valet. We don't know what's going on with them, but we've heard other complaints. So,
oh, my gosh.
I went looking to see if I could, like, pound the guy, but they were all gone. And then I realized, wait a minute, this is actually pretty cool. This is the sort of thing that I would do. He never tried to take money. He can't be accused of theft. All he's doing is he's just announcing that, oh, no, you can't park here. And it's just a prank. And so then, like, 2 weeks later, I realized, oh, so I got to see Joke Valet. joke of ballet.
Yes.
And yeah, it's like, oh my God, it's like, that is so elaborate phenomenon. Thank you. Oh, and the and like the very first, the main, one of the main characters in Showboat is Queenie, your old friend Queenie. Didn't know they was there, but yep. It's like, oh, there's joke ballet and Queenie, your Ouija board tormentor, who
I
yeah.
can't believe
that's
that
right.
people remember these things.
So well, and the other weird thing about that, your joke valet, is that in one of our conversations, he was writing to me with this fake-o French accent about Jacques Vallée, who said that he was going to be on your show, except for this horny person who was obviously ignorant infidel called in. You know, Steve was spoofing himself because he'd called in. So we had the joke valet in the notes too. That's another thing. A lot of these kind of sinks tend to really build. They become very rococo or baroque. They really build on each other in a way, which is something. I love that the joke valet. Oh God, that is. Oh man, that is too much. Oh God, I don't know. I love puns, so it's kind of taking me a while to collect myself after that.
But oh, yeah, so I don't know. So am I imagining things there more than you? Or what do y'all think?
I think I would say it's not, you got something there. Well, and for me, because of reading your ballet jokes earlier, it has that extra resonance.
Oh, it's a,
and I think it gets, you know. So I think partly it, you know, it is, as you say, a little bit catered to the person. But I think most people would say that, you know, especially with Greg's session with Mr. Valet. I mean, I hope I'm not.
I'm reminded of that talk he gave, like that Swiss TED talk. If you recall it, have you all seen that?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. And so he's, like, the topic was, like, you know, what does the future hold, future of information and consciousness, something like that. And he's talking and talking. And then he says, and the most likely, you know, like, the Nazis, they could take over a town just by knowing who people talked to or who they phoned. And now we have Facebook. That is something to consider. And also, like, the next attack is probably going to be, and then he got very abstract. And I was thinking that he's, like, I bet he was trying to see if something odd would manifest by getting all the TED talkers to just sort of muse, to sort of like let their minds open up freely about what the next attack might be.
Yeah.
I think he was leveraging the lecture to do an experiment.
Who is this?
No, it wouldn't be.
Oh, Valet, yeah.
No. Yeah. That's my thought.
I think he's.
No, I wouldn't. He's froze. Mm-hmm.
You wouldn't what?
Oh, I said I wouldn't be surprised.
Yeah, I think there's a, you know, I wish I could develop that though in the way he has. There's always a, I think there's always a, what's the word, subtext to what he's doing. And he wants to see what happens, well, not always, but in a lot of these cases, there's a subtext to what he's doing and wants to see what happens. I think smart, aware people are able to do that. I'm not. I would like to be able to. But I mean, I did it a little bit when I write things. Sometimes I will throw a subtext in there and see if anybody gets it. Because if they do, I'd like to talk to them. And it does not happen very often, if at all. Either that, or I'm just very bad at communicating it.
or the people that that you're talking to, they're cautious and they like they see it, but they're we need more evidence before we come out of hiding, before we give the counter signal.
Yeah. Another thing is that reading Valet's work, he's obviously, you know, especially his diaries, from the time he was pretty, very young, he's been, I think it's pretty obvious, a practicing occultist. And, you know, when you, in my own experience, I found that people that are real good at doing, always having something, some text going, oftentimes you will find that they are practitioners of decades at some type of occult or esoteric practice,
Yeah.
For example, you know, the lamas and the Rinpoches, they were always doing something with the subtext.
Huh.
And so on.
Oh. Yeah. You know what? That reminds me of that, and I've talked about it on the show, seeing the Zen priest in the temple in Kyoto.
Yes.
What was he doing? I don't remember this story.
Oh, two times I've gone to Japan with my mom. She knows, since she does tea ceremony, apparently she knows the head priest at a temple in Kyoto, this, like, you know, 1,200-year-old temple. And you go there, and, you know, the boards there have been trod by monks for, you know, 1,000 years, and they've got a tiny little rock garden with the raked rocks and all that. Anyway, we get there, and a monk is leaving. He's got one of those big mushroom-looking hats on, and he's just walking out. And the priest comes out, and he says, oh, and he waves, and he says, just a minute. I will background it. My mom, when we went to Japan one time, my mom said, what do you want to do? And I said, when we went back, I would like to go see that Zen priest again. And so I've seen him twice, the same guy, in this old temple. When we got there the first time, I think, what did he tell? Oh, I went there with my sister and my mom. It was totally impromptu, too, I think. I think she just, like, showed up. And the guy said, ah, you know. And he took us into the temple and sat us in this little room. And his wife, him and his wife served us tea. And we sat in this 1,000-year-old temple talking to a Zen priest. The thing was, he started screwing with us. He started telling us that we were, you know, we should be really grateful that we got to grow up in the United States and, you know, not wanting for anything, had a decent education and all that. And I'm listening. I'm going, yep, you're right. Yep. Uh-huh. You're a Zen priest. You can say whatever the hell you want. My sister started arguing with him because she was saying, you know, she goes, well, I am. I mean, I am aware of that. And I was thinking, I'm not going to talk to this priest. I'm just going to listen because this is wonderful. And the whole time he's just smiling. Time he's just smiling at us and saying this stuff. And he's looking at me and smiling and look at my sister and smiling while she's arguing with him. And, you know, it's going through my mom because he doesn't speak English. And
okay. Oh, so he's pranking her through an interpreter.
I guess. Like, I don't know if he was. I don't exactly know what his point was. I have no idea what his point was, but my point was, I'm sitting in a 1,000-year-old temple talking to, sitting having tea with a Zen priest. I don't care what he says.
Yeah, well, no, it's nice just to have a talk at all.
And then the second time we went, for some reason, all he wanted to talk about to us was about how Americans were lazy and that we should sit up properly and not slouch. He said, oh, you sit in front of the TV all the time. And I was like, you're right. And when I got home, I stopped slouching. I'm doing it now, but I stopped slouching. I sit up straight with my spine, you know, straight underneath my shoulders and all that. Because he was telling us, you know, sit up like that. Wait, I'm going to sit up because I feel terrible. But he said, you know, if you sit up like that, then, you know, you'll be healthier and you'll feel good. When I started doing that, I had, like, the beginnings of back problems. They were just starting to bother me. None since then. All he said was sit up straight because Americans don't sit up straight, you know. And so I started sitting up straight. You know, like when you're sitting on a mat in Japan, you put your feet under you. I take tea ceremony, so I have to sit like that. But I, you know, that is the normal way to sit. I don't think too many Japanese people have back problems.
Oh yeah. I mean, something about a Western lifestyle, plenty of people have back problems here. But when you're talking about the conversation, what strikes me is I think a lot of times when you have those type of teachers, and they'll say this explicitly, they're just coming up with something to keep your mind, your conscious thinking mind, engaged enough so that you're distracted enough from the real stuff that's going on underneath on the emotional, energetic level. That's usually how they put it.
Oh, okay. Yeah, as far as I can tell, my emotional, energetic level the whole time was, like I said, I'm in a 1,000-year-old temple sitting here with a Zen being allowed to speak to a Zen priest. Nobody that I know could ever get this, get this chance, and I'm getting it. So it's like, it was like a high life experience for me. So I'm like, I'm going to drink this in because this is incredible shit.
Right.
No, and I understand. But this, especially the second time about with the back, when I've you know, sat with teachers and spoken to them after, you know, and they will say explicitly that, you know, that the exchange is going on many different levels. And there's that part of you that says, like you're saying, I don't really understand what his point was. That's the type of thing I hear a lot of people say when, you know, afterwards they'll say, oh, yeah, and then something else happened on this other level besides just, you know, the explicit subject matter of the verbal conversation.
Whether well, that's you know all the secrets of the Zen Buddhist masters because you, like, cooked pancakes for them for 5 years or something like that.
No. Those are Tibetan Buddhists, and I only made one monumental pancake breakfast, although it was a lot of fun. But, yeah, those guys, they always have something going on, man. The main thing that I took away from that is that it's very important to think about your moral and ethical development and how you treat other people, and that is a lot more important than whether or not you can, you know, project your astral body to appear in other people's dreams and get them to agree to things that they may not agree to in the waking state when they have more control over the situation.
Yeah, well, I think they're trying to wean you off the when do I get to smite thing. You know, it's like, you know, but I have a problem. Who is it that has this problem? Well, it's your ego, asshole.
Yeah.
So,
and just because someone is, you know, in charge of some big, you know, religious thing doesn't mean that they don't even have plenty of ego problems, too. So,
yes, exactly. I mean, I know in a Zen temple that the priest is supposed to clean out the toilets, and then, like, the people that are just coming in, the neophytes, get to do the easy stuff. Which is another manifestation of the backwards thing that you were talking about, Steph.
Yeah. Quite so.
Well, I think that's an excellent example, and it's also, I think, really smart in terms of, you know, once you think you're more advanced, then you think you should be getting away with stuff, but I think really you should be more grounded because then you're in more of a position to take advantage of people if you have more, you know, it's like if you're a lawyer with advanced degrees, you're involved in some contract negotiation with someone who can barely read, you know?
Yeah.
It's very easy to take advantage of that other person. It's the same if you, you know, made, quote, spiritual or whatever, development, unquote,
yeah,
for energetic psychic development,
yeah,
in my opinion.
It goes back to ego again, which is why I'm trying to figure out how to pull my ego away from everything, because I think it creates noise that, where, you know, the signal getting to you is going to be corrupted by ego.
I mean, your ego is just what, I mean, the ego is what keeps you from jumping in front of the train, right? So, there, you know, it has its place. The thing is to just, I think, sometimes to, you know, just strengthen the other parts of yourself. But that it's a process. But, you know, something like that is going to, you know, feel...
No, it takes your whole life, probably.
Anyone.
Yeah, unless you're the, you know, unless you're a priest or the Dalai Lama or you know, or, I don't know, the Pope or something, at least the present Pope, it's...
When you've had plenty of previous lives to work on it, yeah.
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 Whatever model you're going to use, as long as... I think if you keep your ego in check, things start to open up. And then you don't have to worry about it.
Yeah.
And, you know, so it's just a continual lesson, you know, continual life lessons of, you know, stop worrying about it. You're not that important. And it's okay that you're not that important. Somebody on Ward actually came on and said, what is that dinging noise that keep, you guys can't hear it, but every time I get a message on my phone, it goes out over the air.
Oh.
Ding, ding.
So. I'm so popular. Ding.
No, it's
that's kind of fun.
Yeah, it's my sister and one other person going at the same time. So,
well, they, you know, that they love you. That's wonderful, right?
Yes, it is. But during a show, I think I got to figure out how to turn it off or turn off the audio thing.
The audio notification. Yeah.
Because I'm in front of my computer half the time, and the phone's at the other end of the house or something like that, and I like taking the phone call on the messages on the computer, so I don't have to leave or whatever. So
yeah.
Right.
Anyway, this is getting pretty far away from what the what Radio Mysterios is supposed to be about, except for the meaning of life stuff. I love the meaning of life stuff.
Well, it always seems to pop up with you on your Radio Mysterios.
Well, because it's important.
So, and Zen
it's
and baseball are both Japanese.
Yes. But well, you know, meaning of life stuff is important shit. And that, if I can talk about it on the show, like I'll listen to somebody else's show or read a book or something like that, and I hear one thing that turns my life into a different direction, in a good direction, that's a good thing. Like I was at almost at a suicidal point, and I read New Inquisition by Robert Anton Wilson. I don't know why, but it made me not want to kill myself anymore.
Is that the one where his daughter gets shot in the convenience store?
No, I think that was Cosmic Trigger, but I don't know why reading New Inquisition suddenly it's somehow made me feel better and figure that there was a reason to live. I don't know if maybe it was Cosmic Trigger, but he talked about Winner's Script in there. It's like, well, why don't you just assume that everything's going to work out fine and that people are being nice to you and that you can do whatever you're going to do. Why don't you assume that for a while? So I tried that for a few years, and it's worked since.
That's tremendous. That's a positive attitude is the armor of God.
Yeah, well, it's what we were talking about earlier about, what does intention do? I think intention, one, it tunes you into the stuff that you want to be tuned into, and two, I'm almost convinced that it changes things in your favor, like aligns things that will work for you. I wanted to do drone flying for money because I didn't have a job anymore. And this last week I did my first drone flying job for money. And it took about 7 months from thinking about it to actually having it happen, which is pretty fast.
That's super fast.
Yeah. So I find that, and when people are saying, I don't know if this is going to happen, I don't know if I want to do this. It's like, if you really want to do it badly, whatever it is, if you just keep at it and figure that, and imagine that you have it done already, which is another Western occult thing. Imagine that it's done in the future and then you just have to work your way to it. And if there's a setback or whatever, that's just a setback. I mean, you're still working towards that thing in the future that's supposed to be there. So, use that model. That model has worked for me.
That model works quite well, and it's also just like I suppose visualize being happy, and then whatever happens, you get to be happy, and then it doesn't really matter what else happens, and you can find all sorts of amazing discoveries as it went. I was doing sort of an extra experiment with Terramania with the announcement that everything was going to be incredible. Just to get, trying to get the visualization of awesomeness in everyone's heads, and in hopes that just to see what amazing things would happen, what odd synchronicities. That was a separate experiment going on, and it worked. Like that guy, that body snatcher in the desert who showed up at the Londoner, and those like two or three people with UFO experience. I still haven't gotten the pictures from that guy whose dad was into or grandpa did all the Venezuelan stuff.
Yeah,
but even knowing he existed, totally. Oh, and I saw an owl on the road, which never happens.
Right next to me.
There are experiments to be done everywhere.
Yeah, right next to me here is the piece of masonry that I took from the Judge Proctor's well at at Aurora, yes. It's in fact, I just smacked the blinds with it. Yeah, I saw it sitting there next to the well, and I wrote the date on it and wrote Aurora. It's disappeared. It's like over a few weeks, the stone has sucked the ink in, and I don't see it anymore. Weird.
It must be alien technology.
Must be.
Or it could be that. Speaking of. Like weird ink blots and Forrest J. Ackerman.
Yes,
maybe that's where the ink came from.
Yeah, the ink went. Yeah. It didn't get sucked in. It got transmutated into something else. Or what's the word? Transubstantiated into something else. Teleported. It got trans somethinged.
I like transubstantiated because that's more with the big cheese upstairs and whatnot.
Yes.
Well, he's the one who does it the most, but yeah, just any sort of transmutation will fit the bill if you choose to use it, but transmutate also works.
Yeah. All those trans words, it's very exciting. Yeah, I got to say, for the experiment, seeing so much happen just from thinking about it and how directing your attention, I've been thinking about trying to be more clearly about, okay, where do I want to go? What do I want to have happening in my life? Because when you focus on that, it seems to have a result. And I want, you know, I've had a lot of really bad health problems throughout my adult life since the time I was about 15, 16 years old. And so there's a lot of things that, you know, I kind of get in the idea of, don't think about what you're going to be doing too much because, you know, you could end up, you know, being housebound for a year with another bout of asthma BS or whatever, which, you know, it's like a survival strategy, but it's not like the way to having the best life. And so in some areas, I really have thought hard about wanting things and goals. But in other areas, I kind of let it slough off. And this has led me to believing I really would like to be more focused about, okay, what do I want, and making sure that I'm thinking that and intending that and working towards it for there. Because I do enjoy, you know, sewing and designing clothes, and I would really like to have just a shop, a little boutique with, you know, some clothes and books and stuff like that. Nothing world-shattering, but for me, it would be exciting and fun and a way to make a little money and meet people. So
yeah,
I think it would be fun.
Yeah, well, imagine it already done. Imagine that it's sitting there in the future, and you just have to work your way towards it. I mean, that's the model. Well, see, different things work for different people, but that one has seemed to work for me. It worked with my psychology.
No, I hadn't heard that particular way of it before until yesterday when my mom was talking about something. She's like, oh, I just need to imagine I'm in the future, and it's already worked out.
Yes, exactly.
So it's funny. It ended up...
Your mom's a high magician and doesn't know it.
That's no joke.
I think a lot of people's
parents. She has two little familiars in the house that have been very quiet. She has two very barky dogs, and they've been so quiet during these 2 hours. They're less than like 15 feet away from me, and that's pretty remarkable.
They know important stuff's being discussed, so they're being. Respectful of it.
Very attentive. Yes. Yes.
Like, oh, those spreadsheets where that guy and that chick thought they heard something. Yeah.
Yeah. If we bark, they'll just think we're supporting it.
Yeah, they'll think that they did. So God, oh, I don't want to be in their spreadsheet. Oh my God, he's gonna. don't say a word.
I was going through songs to play at the end here, which I will ask Steph, but I for some reason I stopped on all the artists that have honey. Honey Bees, Honey Bird and the Bees, Honey Boy Martin and the Voices, the Honeycombs, the Honeymoon Killers.
Ooh, the Honeymoon Killers.
Yeah.
I've always had a soft spot for reading about true crime, so the Honeymoon Killers sound fantastic.
Oh, okay. Well, it's Mad Woman Blues by the Honeymoon Killers. It's only a minute and 48 seconds long. Jeez. It's like, what are they, Ramones? So.
They're Honeymoon Killers. Like, they didn't have time for a long life. This isn't the, you know, Golden Years Killers. That's, you know, they killed her right away during the honeymoon.
I think there was actually a film called The Honeymoon Killers from the 1960s. Anyway, I think this band, I think it's a girl band. It's from a CD set I had of all girl bands. I would like to express my great appreciation to you both for doing this and telling me about it and coming on the show to talk about it. And thanks so much, Steph, and thanks, Steve.
Thank you again for having this great show and having us on and letting us, just glad to give something back. But really, your show is a true treasure.
Thank you.
It really is.
I agree. Absolutely. It is just a pleasure.
Okay.
Really exciting to be part of the show. Yay.
Yes. Isn't this the first show you've ever been on, Steph?
I think I called in once or twice before, like as a caller.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like I called in, you know, like a caller calling into the show.
Yeah.
But no, I've never been like specifically like a guest on or anything.
Okay, good. Then I mean, of any show, I think that's the first time you've been a guest on any show. Is that true?
Yeah, I think so.
Yay, a first.
People,
thank you.
You know, like, yeah, there you go. Yes. I think I've had people play like voicemails and stuff on Project Archivist a few times, but I was so nervous. It was embarrassing.
Well, you weren't nervous this time, and if you were, I couldn't tell.
Well, you're very kind.
Yeah. I'm not being kind. I'm just telling the truth. Anyway, Mad Woman Blues, because that's what Steph wanted to hear.
Right on.
Thank you, guys. Here's Mad Woman Blues by the Honeymoon Killers. And I'll probably play something else after that, too. But here's Steph's request.
And I'll turn the microphone there so you can hear it. Uh-oh.
Right on. Thank you.
Bye.
Bye-bye. Watch out. There we go.
We've got extrasensory perception. It makes our love unique. There isn't any doubt or question when into your mind I can peek. Not with extrasensory perception, our love will grow and grow. You won't have to worry or wonder. Just look in my head and you'll know. You'll know the secrets that are in my heart. You'll know the reason and the rhyme. We'll be together when we're far apart. Baby, you'll be with me all the time. With extrasensory perception, our love will be refined. Since our affair had its inception, I can't get you out of my mind. There is no chance of a deception. How dull it's gonna be. Let's go find two normal people. Baby, stop thinking at me.
What was that you thought?